You're listening to Girovagando, the cycling podcast at the 2026 Giro d'Italia. The cycling podcast, every day on the ground at the Giro d'Italia since 2016.
Today we are not in Rome.
For the final time, buonasera Michele Pelacci.
Ciao Daniele, we are back for 21st stage.
We're separated by several hundred kilometers. We're still in Italy, Pelacci, but oh, what a sad sight. You're there sitting there with your top off. That's the first I said. What I meant, Michele, was that you're on my computer screaming and you're not sitting in front of me, because our paths have diverged this morning. We already announced yesterday that, as usual, we're not going to Rome for various reasons, practical reasons, ecological reasons. We'll put that there as well, Michele. And hence, you're in Parma. You've returned to the home of the
Parma today.
Yeah, you've returned to the home of the Pelacci Prosciutto Empire. And I am somewhere in a secret location in the hills of Valpolicella, above Verona. Anyway, Pelacci, meanwhile, the Giro d'Italia has been in Rome today for the grand finale, the Eternal City. And we've just watched it. We've just watched this 109th Giro d'Italia conclude in tonight's episode. We're going to review the whole thing from Bulgaria. Remember, Pelacci, can you still remember us picking up the car in Sofia Airport and embarking on this fantastic journey together with the Baron in the middle? Brian, we're going to review the whole thing tonight. That's mainly what we're going to do. Well, of course, we are going to tell you what happened this afternoon / this evening in Rome as well. But Michele, just tell us first of all, how's your day been since we parted just after or around about lunchtime?
Quite long, Daniel, actually, because after we parted ways at the Verona airport, when we returned the cycling pod car, the second cycling pod car.
The one you didn't ruin.
I didn't. I didn't ruin zero cars, but I hopped on a taxi to the Verona railway station and then a train to Bologna, Parma. I had to go to Parma, but my brother, he was at a local cycling race. So he said, jump off to the train in Rubiera. And then he gave me a ride, basically a lift from Rubiera to Parma. And that's how I made it home.
You should have stayed in Rubiera, because there are fantastic restaurants in Rubiera. But anyway, here you are, Pelacci. Here you are in your bedroom with your T-shirt off, talking about the stage that we have just seen, the final stage, this much maligned final stage in Rome. We've said before, we think the Giro d'Italia should finish certainly closer to stage 20, not necessarily in Milan, but certainly closer to where stage 20 finishes. But actually, incidentally, you were conducting a large-scale investigation yesterday into logistics, weren't you? The team's logistics going to Rome?
And it was a big mess, because some teams had to sleep in Trieste and then drive all the way to Florence and then hours of driving again to Rome. And some teams didn't even send the full-fledged ammiraglie or team cars or some
buses. It was the skeleton crew, wasn't it, a lot of teams sent?
Yeah. And some staff members as well. They were driving all the way to the Netherlands before, or Belgium, or some other Nordic countries before this Rome stage. So, yeah, not everyone is getting to enjoy the final Rome passerella, as they say.
What would Indro Montanelli say, who we talked about last week when we were in Milan, when he said that, what did he say, that Charles V, this is famous old journalist Indro Montanelli, who's dead now, but he talks about Charles V knowing various different languages, but him needing to learn Milanese if he was going to become a bike race fan, because the Giro d'Italia spoke Milanese, and that was the official language of the Giro d'Italia, as far as Montanelli was concerned. Well, Pelacci, the Giro did finish not in Milan, but with Milan. Let's find out what I mean in today's final prosciuttometro of this year's Giro d'Italia.
Il prosciuttometro di Michele Pelacci.
Pelacci, Vero ciclismo?
It really was. It really was, Daniele. And as they say in Rome, so the best thing about Milan was the road to Rome. Finally, we made it to the capital city of Italy. Everything was pretty much set in stone before the last stage of the Giro d'Italia. Just one sprint to go to officially declare Vingegaard as the Maglia Rosa, Magnier in the Ciclamino points jersey, Eulalio as the white youth competition winner, and Giulio Ciccone as the KOM blue jersey. Triumphant. Multiple Bardiani riders were on the attack on the very first phases of the stage, which I love, of course. Filippo Turconi, the youngest rider of the race, won the intermediate sprint of the Fontana dello Zodiaco. That's on Ostia, the Lungomare, there on the beach, on the seaside. We had the usual celebrations with flutes of wine. Cin-cin were made by the winning team. Giulio Ciccone was handed out.
I'm glad you said wine. I'm glad you didn't say champagne, because of course it wouldn't be champagne in Italy. Of course not.
Of course, it was probably Astoria wine.
Or... yeah, it was probably Asti Spumante. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Ciccone again was handing out candies to several members of the peloton, and only with around 60k to go, the race entered a serious mood. Nico Denz, Ben Turner, Andrea Misfud, the sort of cycling podcast favorite Andrea Misfud, were among the attackers, all caught after a few minutes. The Red Bull kilometer was won by the leader of that kilometer Red Bull classification, or if that's how it's called, Igor Arrieta. Tobias Bayer and Remy Rochat went on a little bit of a Trofeo Baracchi together. Then some changes happened at the front of the race, and four riders were leading. Rochat now with his teammate Remy Cavagna, alongside Victor Campenaerts and Matteo Sobrero. To catch them, Suda Quickstep was pulling hard the peloton on the twisty and turny and very interesting circuit around beautiful parts of Rome, such as Foro Imperiali or Terme di Caracalla and the Colosseum, of course. And this circuit did create some selection. Two big guys emerged from this chaotic situation with around 18k to go, Filippo Ganna with pure power and Jasper Stuyven, who bridged an initial gap. A trio of Ganna, Sobrero and Stuyven was very dangerous for the sprinter's team, and Ganna versus the peloton was an amazing fight to watch. Sobrero and Stuyven were only able to stay on Ganna's wheel while the peloton was mostly pulled by the Rose Rockets. The attacking trio was caught with 3k to go. Mirko Maestri went on a fully fledged Fagianata, nowhere to go for Maestri, and Suda Quickstep and the Rose Rockets were the first teams under the Flamme Rouge. There was a little kick, the final zampellotto of the Giro d'Italia in the last 500 meters, and the sprinters were competing for the final stage win. It was a no contest, to be honest, as Jonathan Milan blew off the field. Great final, great volata from Milan. Four prosciutti for the final stage. As we had a little more. We had a little more sauce on this than a normal sprinter stage. I have to go four prosciutti.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the slices of prosciutto that your mum left for you when you got back home, when you arrived back home in Parma? Actually, she didn't leave prosciutto. I know what she left, because you had her on loudspeaker in the car the other day, and she was talking about these meatballs with peas, with piselli in them, that she'd made for you specially for when you returned.
Her favorite dish for me, piselli con polpette. I love my meatballs. I love them.
There you go. Anyway, Pellacci 4, that's controversial. But look, your selections have always been controversial throughout this Giro d'Italia. And so it continued right until the final day. We're going to take the unusual step, Pellacci, of doing a very small section of analysis here, because we're not going to be analysing the final stage in parts 2 and 3, which we usually do. But just to say, It was an exciting final stage. It was made exciting by that move by Filippo Ganna. But it was an intriguing one, Pellacci. Maybe we'll find out more about this in due course. But Ganna attacking and doing all of the work on his own, with Sobrero glued to his wheel, Stuyven glued to his wheel. That made sense, because those two were respectively protecting the chances of their sprinters. So Sobrero for Milan and Stuyven for Magnier. But where the plot thickens here is that Sobrero, He is good, very good friends with Filippo Ganna. He dates his sister, has been dating his sister for a very long time. And also, of course, Ganna and Jonathan Milan are extremely good friends as well. So I'm not suggesting there was any kind of, you know, pre-arrangement about how this stage was going to go. But it did strike me that they must have sort of, Sobrero and Ganna must have talked about this. And they must have known that Ganna was going to do this. Do you not think?
Interesting. It's an interesting question. I think maybe not. We're putting the carro davanti ai buoi. How do you say that?
Well, look. Yeah, you're putting the horse in front of the cart. But it did have the effect of changing how the lead out went. Definitely, the last few kilometers were different. You know, they looked different, and they developed and then went differently from other sprint stages we've seen. And what it meant was that the Unibet Rose Rockets were really the only team, because Decathlon, I feel like, I don't want to say Decathlon have lost confidence in Tobias Lund over the course of this Giro, but maybe Lund's lost a bit of confidence in himself. Okay, in all of the sprints, they've come late, but certainly they haven't taken the same amount of responsibility as they were doing for the sprint stages early on in the race. So the onus was really on Unibet Rose Rockets, given that Trek were represented and Sudal Quickstep were represented. What did that mean for Unibet Rose Rockets? Well, they had to go too early. I mean, Lukasz Kubiš did this huge turn, and then they sort of melted in the last kilometer. Groenewegen was left with just one man with about 800 meters to go, and he launched his sprint very, very early, probably too early. I don't think he would have beaten Milan anyway. So it was just curious the way the whole thing panned out. I mean, Filippo Ganna attacking on the last day in Rome kind of makes sense. I mean, people have been criticizing Ganna for not doing enough in this Giro d'Italia alongside his stage win in the long time trials. It was a perfectly, you know, logical move on the big showcase stage. But yeah, it was just curious. So cogs were turning in my head, Pellacci. Anyway.
You're correct. I think the Sudal Quickstep guys were also pretty early in their pro. Under the Flamme Rouge, it was just Jasper Stuyven, then Fabio van den Bosch, then Paul Magnier. We're just recording a few minutes after the stage finished, and we don't know yet, but probably I think Paul Magnier had a mechanical or some problems. I saw he was against the left barriers, and he was super slow coming up the little kicker in the final 100 meters. I think something was wrong with his chain or bike. Maybe had a flat tire at the worst possible moment. I think something has to be said about Little Trek, right? Because we've been criticizing their team. Max Walscheid has been very solid in this in this final phases, in this last 2 kilometers, putting Jonathan Milan where he needed to be. Jonathan Milan himself, super brave. There was a moment in which he gave a super, at the limit, spallata or
shoulder barge.
Yes, to some opponents to create some space for him. And it should be noted that the guy who was most able to follow him, Giovanni Leonardi, came second at the end.
Yeah, I knew you'd like that. one for the little guys, Leonardi finishing second. I don't mean that with disrespect, but what a great result for him. And he had to sort of zigzag all over the place to get that second place. So, a lot of credit to him. But actually, just going back to the point about Ganna, Sobrero and Stuyven being down the road, I think one thing that does when you've got teammates down the road marking the move, as Little Trek and Sudal had, it maybe sort of lowers everyone's kind of heart rate and makes everyone in the lead out train a little bit more relaxed, and it means they're less inclined to jump the gun and go early. And maybe we saw a bit of that. I mean, Stuyven did so little work, he didn't do any work behind Ganna, that he was able to slot back into the lead out train and do his normal job effectively. So, and Walscheid also in the interview post race, he referred to the fact that he also was very glad that he'd managed to remain patient and drop Milan in the fashion and at the point in the last kilometer or last couple of kilometers where he wanted to be dropped. So it all's well that ends well, as we say, for Little Trek, Pellacci. And a wonderful hint to the Giro d'Italia that maybe we should be finishing in Milan after all, because His was the name of the winner of the final stage. Pelacci, I'm going to give the results of this final stage, and then we're going to do a run through of the various other results at the end of this Giro d'Italia, the rankings. So an Italian 1-2, Ciclismo really is healing as this Giro ends. Milan wins in time of 3 hours and 5 minutes 50 seconds. Average speed 42.296 kilometers an hour. A lot slower, incidentally, than the stage to Milan last Sunday. And I was keeping my eye out for any sort of interference by the motorbikes and or any riders gesturing to the motorbikes to get further away. We may hear from riders in the next few minutes and hours that motorbikes again played their part today, but didn't see any of that. Paul Penwet was third, Groupama, a pretty joyless Giro for them, but that's a good final result. Dylan Groenewegen, fourth place. Mads Mikkels for EF Education was fifth. Jensen Plowright, sixth. Tobias Lund for Decathlon was seventh. Corbin Strong for NSN, eighth. Toon Aerts, ninth. Luca Mozzato, tenth. And Paul Manier in the Ciclamino jersey, way down in 11th place. What does that mean for the general classification? Well, paradoxically, we had Visma Lisa bike wearing black jerseys. Now, of course, the black jersey used to denote the last place finisher in the Giro d'Italia once upon a time. But Visma Lisa bike finished with the winner of this Giro d'Italia. Of course, I'm talking about Jonas Vingegaard. He won the race in the end with a margin of victory of 5 minutes, 22 seconds over Felix Gall. Jai Hindley completes the podium, 6:25 down. Tyrone Arensman, 4th, 7:02. Derek G. West, 7:56. I'm not going to give the time gaps, but I'm going to give the rest of the top 10. Alfonso Eulalio, 6th. Michael Storer, 7th. Davide Piganzoli, 8th. Damiano Caruso, 9th. And Egan Bernal, 10th. In the points competition, as I've already said, Paul Manier won the Ciclamino jersey. Giulio Ciccone won the blue King of the Mountains jersey. No King of the Mountains points on offer today, so nothing changed there. And Alfonso Eulalio crowned a fantastic Giro d'Italia for him by winning the white jersey for Bahrain Victorious. The team's classification, we mentioned yesterday that was being dominated and would be won by Visma Lisa bike. They all sat up in the final few meters, so they will maybe lose a tiny bit of time today. The definitive ranking has not yet been published, but they will still win that classification. Pelacci, a few other of the quirky sort of tangential classifications that we get at the Giro and we haven't mentioned at any point in 3 weeks, or barely anyway, and a few of them I don't even know how they work, to be honest. Manuele Tarozzi, Bardianismo lives. He won the intermediate sprint classification ahead of Mattia Baez of Team Polti Visit Malta. This one foxed me, this one confused me, Pelacci. Red Bull Kilometer, there's a classification, we knew that. Einer Rubio was winning it a few days ago with a fairly decent margin. Suddenly, Igor Arrieta appears at the top of the classification with a fairly emphatic margin over Rubio. How did that happen? I've no idea. And I don't think we're going to tell you either. I don't think we're going to be able to explain that either. Are we still waiting on? No, the Fuga, that's the breakaway classification sponsored by Regina Toilet Rolls, won by Diego Sevilla of Team Polti Visit Malta. And the super team, is that the same as the team classification, Pelacci? Do you know?
It is the same, yep.
It is the same. And team, as I said earlier, Team Visma Lisa bike win that. Combativity, we don't know yet who's won the Combativity prize.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, that will leave that.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably end this part of the podcast with that cliffhanger, on that cliffhanger. And I don't think we'll be able to reveal the answer between now and the end of the episode. But what we will do, Pelacci, what we are going to be able to do is hear from the stage winner, Jonathan Milan, finally waited till the last day, but finally got his stage win. And the winner of the Giro d'Italia, Jonas Vingegaard.
I was kind of expecting something from people, maybe. I saw him in the beginning of the stage with a single chainring in the front, and I say, it's not that usual. I mean, but luckily we were saving Sobre on that he was in the front to cover this attacks, and luckily so we didn't have to pull or in the back to, you know, to lose other guys to bring back people. So but I think the guys did also a super good job in the final.
I ask you this morning if it has been a frustrating Giro. Finally, it was just a long wait until the most prestigious win that you can have on this Giro, no?
Yeah, it was a really, really long Giro. And I'm really happy that we always keep fighting, keep believing in it until the last stage. Sometimes it's not easy to keep focusing on when... For me, the results they're not coming. We was always there. We was always looking. We was always believing it. But I think our powerful was also to change the page, turn the page, and keep focusing for the new goals that we was having.
Well, Jonas, congratulations! It's done. You have celebrated this pink jersey here in Roma, which means that you have won the three Grand Tour. Tell us a bit first the feeling the. Feeling of winning here, the feeling of the achievement to have completed the three Grand Tour Slams.
Oh, it's a really special feeling. It's more special than I actually expected, and just to have won now all three Grand Tours is way more than a dream coming true. It's some kind of way I feel like that if not that it's the case, but if I would stop tomorrow, that my career would be complete, and of course I still have a lot of goals, but I also want to enjoy this at the moment.
At the end, it's a great victory, all the mountain finishes in the team. Was there in control all along? Was there any doubt at any point from you on this Giro?
No, I mean, of course, you come into the Giro, I feel good. Of course, there's, in some kind of way, I think in top sports, there's always some kind of doubt in yourself. And that's how it is in top sports. But, I mean, with this shape I've had here, I gained also confidence here, and I feel like I've gained shape here in this race as well.
Yeah, compared to last year, you think you're even better, knowing that there is a tour coming after, it's also a big goal. You have a reassuring sign here that you can maybe be at a higher level than last year?
Yeah, I mean, with what we know from previous years on how it was with doing the tour and the Vuelta, then with the level I showed here in this Giro, I at least believe that I will be in a very, very good shape for the Tour de France.
What to do before the tour now to be ready on time?
Well, first a bit of rest, and then afterwards a bit of training as well. And then, yeah, it's 5 weeks, so I think 1 week of rest, and then three and a half weeks of normal training.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car, the back of the pack, please.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Overtime, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and 2x the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.
Pelacci!
Daniele, we are back for a final time!
We're final time. We've voyaged, I don't know whether we've voyaged back or forward in time, Pelacci. We're currently in. Let's be transparent. We've been transparent with our leaders, we've been with our readers. We haven't got readers, we've got listeners. We've been transparent with them throughout this Giro d'Italia. So let's continue to do that by telling them we're currently in Verona Airport. Valerio Catullo. Who is Valerio Catullo, you know?
Is he a Roman poet, right?
Not sure. Anyway, so. That's where we are because we're sort of exchanging merchandise. I'm sending you back to Parma, to your prosciutto empire in Parma. And I'm driving my parents around Italy for the next week, so they've just arrived. So we just picked them up. But Pelacci, we've covered now the final stage, which will have happened in the future. That's how avant-gardist this podcast is. We talk about things that happen in the future. And now we're going to look back on this Giro d'Italia in its entirety. We're going to summarize it in the same way that you so beautifully summarize the stages every day in the Prosciuttometro. I am going to sum up the whole 3 weeks mm-hmm. of this Giro d'Italia, or try to, and you're going to interject when, if, probably when I get things wrong. So the 109th, there's a mistake straight away. The 109th Giro d'Italia started on the Black Sea coast in Burgas, where we saw Paul Magny first notice that he would be the sprinter to beat by becoming also the first Frenchman to take the pink jersey since Bruno Armijn 2 years ago.
Yep.
Before him, incidentally, the most recent French leader of the Giro had been Laurent Jalabert way back in 1999. Pellacci were 1 year old, I think. Maybe not even that. Yep. The next day took us inland and uphill towards the one-time capital of Bulgaria, a nowadays sleepy hilltop town of Veliko Tarnovo. We also had an exotic winner with Thomas Silva becoming Uruguay's first ever Grand Tour stage winner. And indeed also the new race leader that afternoon, and specifically a crash in a wet and hectic finale, would also deprive the race of Jayvine, Marc Soler and Adam Yates of UAE, and Santiago Buitrago of Bahrain victorious. Those teams ended up looking for and finding success from other sources. The last day in Bulgaria saw Magny triumph again. The Giro then headed home over the Adriatic to Calabria in the deep south, where UAE's Jonathan Narvaez began his one-man mission to redress UAE's sticky start. He was helped in that endeavour by teammate Igor Arrieta, who got the better of Bahrain's Portuguese revelation Afonso Eulalio in a slapstick finale in Potenza the following day. Eulalia's consolation prize was the pink jersey and a 6 minute lead over the pre-race GC favourites. The 41 Italians on the start list had so far failed to score. Pellacci, Ciclismo was fading, dying. Pretty invisible at that point. But that changed after a crash-marred sprint in Naples with Davide Ballerini of XTS Astana, affording the chaos to prevail. Finally, a week in, the Giro was hitting the heights, Blockhouse specifically, and it was on that climb that Giulio Pellizzari's grimace and inability to cling to Jonas Vingegaard's back wheel signified the beginning of the end of all real suspense in the fight for overall victory. Ving the Merciless won there and again the following day at Cornale Scale, setting up what would eventually turn into a Visma clean sweep of the Giro's summit finishes. The race paused again in Tuscany, then awoke to Filippo Ganna's supersonic performance in an individual time trial that somewhat surprisingly concluded with Eulalio still in pink. Three exciting days with glorious backdrops and opportunistic winners came next. Narvaez striking again in Chiavari, Alex Segert bolting out of the peloton to win in Novi Ligure, and Alberto Bettiol producing his triennial breakaway masterclass in Verbania. The Alps beckoned, and with them a third stage win for Vingegaard already, and finally the pink jersey in the Val d'Aosta. Behind him, Felix Gau had emerged as clearly the best of the rest, while Hindley, Arensman and G West looked the best equipped to scrap for third. Vingegaard's victory now seemed assured, although Frederik Dviesner's upstaging the sprinters in Milan also reminded us that nothing in life is certain, except death, taxes and polemica over motorbikes and city circuits at the Giro d'Italia. The next two stages serve further evidence of this Giro's defining juxtaposition. Predictability in the mountains, as with the latest Vingegaard parade in Cari, and thrilling drama in the so-called transitional or breakaway stages. Michael Valgren this time took the bouquet in Andalo. Pieve di Soligo was expected to deliver something similar, and yet Magny survived the mighty Muro di Cadelpoggio to complete his hat-trick of sprint wins and seal the Ciclamino jersey. The battle to succeed Simon Yates was supposed, in fact designed, to climax on the last 2 days in the mountains, and yet all that really peaked was Visma's total domination of any stage that headed towards the peaks and into the clouds. Sepp Kuss completed his personal Grand Tour stage win Grand Slam at Piano di Pezze, while Jonas Vingegaard only had to wait 24 hours to all but guarantee his own Giro Tour Vuelta Royal Flush. But actually, I'm not a poker player, but hopefully that is an appropriate metaphor. Royal Flush. He's taking it all now. joining Pelacci. Do you know how many riders? Oh, I had this in front of me. How many riders have done that? Won all three
seven
major tours?
They are Felice Gimondi, Jacques Anquetil, Eddy Merckx, Bernard Hinault, Alberto Contador, Vincenzo Nibali, and Chris Froome. What a list.
It is a list. And most of those names on that list, they've taken multiple of at least two of the three grand tours. But Vingegaard, he has assured his place, Bellacci, in the pantheon, I would say, of grand tour riders. And listen, it's not over for him either yet, is it? Because he's 29 years of age. And I suppose one of the questions at the end of this Giro d'Italia is, where is he now in his career? Where is he in his timeline? How many more Grand Tours is he going to win? How many more Tours de France is he going to win? I mean, that was a big question as this Giro d'Italia ended. Have we seen him over the last 3 weeks got a bit closer, edged a little bit closer to Tadej Pogacar? And is there going to be another twist in this rivalry that's defined Grand Tour racing over the last few years? Because, of course, Vingegaard winning in 2022 was the first big twist. And a year after that, we thought that maybe Pogacar was never going to win another one. And a lot of people in the last couple of years have now decided that Vingegaard's never going to win another Tour de France. Where are you at the end of this Tour de France with that?
It's a great question. Remember, Vingegaard is not that old. He was born on 10th of December, 1996.
He's a similar age. He's quite a similar age to you. Yeah. That's quite hard to believe somehow. Anyway.
Listen, I think if Jonas Vingegaard gets to Tour de France in a very great form and delivers performances that are very close to Pogacar's ones, I think he can set a trend maybe of how the Giro d'Italia can be actually a good preparation for the Tour de France. He said, Jonas Vingegaard, after the Giro d'Italia, I was thinking about this morning, Daniele, how he was talking that he had to get out of the Giro not on his knees, right? And he said, I'm not on my knees. I'm ready to train again. I'm ready to have a June full of altitude camps, maybe full of miles, full of, threshold, interval training and all of that. I think he gets to the Tour and be very good.
And Pelacci, I think he has benefited from a unique set of circumstances this year. I think he's been very lucky that he's been able to get out of the Giro d'Italia as fresh as he seems to be. I mean, no one's fresh at the end of a Grand Tour, but relatively speaking, relatively to how it could have gone in other circumstances, he, of course, can't control the start list. He doesn't know which riders are going to turn up. Had there been, a Paul Sexas, for example, of course, if there had been a Pogacar, it would have been very different. Even if it had been a Remco Evenepoel, even Pelacci, and this is something I've not heard anyone talk about, but think about UAE and think about the risk, the biggest risk maybe that they face going into the Tour de France. There are two, Sexas and Vingegaard. One way they could easily have counteracted that risk is have made life as hard as possible for him at the Giro d'Italia. And they were deprived of the possibility of doing that by that crash in Velikon Tarnovo. No one's really talked about it. We haven't talked about it. We haven't dwelled on it. But Adam Yates could conceivably, even if he hadn't pushed Vingegaard very close for the overall victory, I think they could have conspired to make some of these stages a little bit more complicated for Visma Lisebike. Do you not?
Interesting. I think also this is
interesting. That means no.
No. I don't have a yes or no answer, but
interesting theory.
We didn't say, yeah, it is. We didn't say the same things about Pogacar in 2024, right? Because he just, in our view, he obliterated the competition.
Yeah.
And nothing could have changed that narrative, right? Mm. Meanwhile, with Vingegaard, somehow, we're still saying, could have been more challenged, could have been unlucky. For example, I think maybe it was the case last year, but again, this year, you remember any Visma Lisebike rider crash? I don't.
Well, we're going to talk about that with their direct sportif, Mark Reef, in a minute. Because, of course, Pelacci, this Giro started in Bulgaria. And in Bulgaria, as there always is, my first few stages of a Grand Tour, there's always concerns about crashes, there's always concerns about chaos. Yep. A lot of sprinters here at this race, a lot of lead-out trains as well. So there was the potential for there to be a lot of chaos, and we didn't really know what the roads were going to be like in Bulgaria, didn't know whether it was going to be dangerous and so on and so forth. But of course, one of the storylines that we explored over the first few days was this new approach by Visma Lisebike of taking a step back in the sprint finishes, partly to preserve the health of their riders. They lost Wilco Kelderman on the day in Veliko Tarnovo. It was after the crash in Veliko Tarnovo. But in terms of the bunch sprints and elsewhere in the race as well, there wasn't too much chaos in those finales, or too much chaos that led to crashes anyway, and they benefited hugely from that. I mean, look, you can look at Vingegaard's performance and say it was consummate, it was exemplary. You also have to say the same about his team. I mean, there were question marks over a few of his domestiques when he came into the race, I would say. Piganzoli, we hadn't seen him in this role as a key mountain domestique for someone who was aspiring to win the race. Bart Lemon, I think Bart Lemon has been good at times. So this is the guy who is a very interesting story. He came from the military, didn't he? Dutch military. And a bit of a Primoz Roglic type story. He came to cycling relatively late, or certainly elite cycling relatively late. And it's clearly got potential, a lot of potential, good engine, but he rode the Tour de France 2 years ago and was good on some days and less good on others. So there's a bit of a question mark over him. Tim Rex, you know, a new entry, I suppose, to the Grand Tour team, Visma Lisebike. And who am I forgetting? Sepp Kuss, I mean, I would say he's probably a bit of a guarantee. He's a sure thing, isn't he? He's a sure thing. Even when he's not at his best, I mean, he still delivers performances, and he's shown that on numerous occasions. But there were a few potential vulnerabilities, weren't there? And the team has, well, it's been perfect. And well, should we hear now, in fact, Palacci, because we're talking about a lot of things that are going to be discussed in this conversation I had with Mark Rafe yesterday morning. Where were we? Gimona then Friuli at the start of stage 20. So Mark Rafe, we've heard from him numerous occasions during this Giro d'Italia, Visma Lisebike Direct Sportive. And he talked to me, well, first he talked to me about Sepp Kuss, who, of course, the previous day had won at Piani de Pezze. And then we went on to talk about Vingegaard's Giro, how it was planned and how it was executed.
Well, Mark, obviously 2 days to go at this point, 2 stages to go. I just want to go back to yesterday and Sepp's win. I remember speaking to Sepp at the end of the 2024 Vuelta about the previous year, when he'd won the Vuelta, of course, and he'd also done the 3 Grand Tours. And he didn't really have an answer to the question, but he did wonder whether doing the 3 Grand Tours in the long term, whether he'd actually sort of suffered a little bit because of that the following year in 2024. Like I say, he didn't really know for sure, but he had that impression. And what's been the feeling about that in the team?
I think that where we think about it's not really that it is physically. I don't know if you point to that, but I mean, that's the feeling what I had with your question, but it was more the expectation that came with this, that he won the Vuelta. And that also brought something, like pressure, expectations, also expectations from himself, a different role in the team, a different role for the people in cycling, and those kind of things. That was something where I think, or where we think, that was also something where he had to get used to. He was always more in the shadow, more as a support rider, and as a support rider, also with his character that was matching very good, I think. And in that way, he can also, how to say it in English. To rise above himself. Yeah. I don't know if you understand I mean, but that, yeah, that
relative to expectations.
Exactly. Yeah. Just on the mountaintop finishes, and he could just chill in the flat days, chill in the hectic. But he just needed to do it on the mountains, and there he could make the difference. And that he also did several times, but in support for someone else. And that changed to trying to be a leader in certain races. And we also saw that in the past, that the beginning of the year was always difficult for him to reach his level, but more towards June, July, August, September, there he always was on his best level. And we tried in the start also to Catalunya to be a GC leader, but yeah, that was difficult already before 23, but after 23 it remained the same. And then he got Corona just before the Tour, that also hit hard. And then towards the Vuelta, the preparation was not perfect, so also in the Vuelta it was not perfect, where he still was very important in the win for Wout, that first one, that sprint where he pulled Soler back. So he was important still for the team in those moments, but being a leader in certain races, that was challenging.
Just thinking about the Giro generally, obviously it seems to have gone perfectly. I keep saying this to you, but in what ways has it been different to expectations? I mean, we talked about Piganzoli's been better. I guess maybe Rex has been better than expectations. But in what general ways has the Giro been maybe sort of different to what you guys thought you would get here?
We hoped to have a race like this, of course. Our plan was also with the pink jersey to give that gift. I mean, not to take it too early, let's say then like that. And when we would come in the situation that we would take it, then we were potentially able to give it away. That another team was also, during the first week or maybe also during the second week, that we did not have the race in our hands. That we also, the Giro, how it was set up, there were only like a few stages over the whole Giro where we could make a difference in the mountains. So that was our focus point. For the rest, the breakaway could make it quite often. There were a few sprint stages, so those stages we just had to get through on a good way, get Jonas safe to the finish line and do the right things, and then try to hit on the mountain stage. And that is what we set up front, and that is also what we did. And although Wilco is not here anymore, and that could be another extra value for sure on quite some mountain stage, but we also had the confidence that with the riders that we were having, that we could take the race in our hands and could also make sure that we would bring Jonas in a situation that he could win. And of course, when you have the best climber, there's always a certain space of error. But so far, we did not have to search for that. We were always in control. And I think also with the experience of all the years that we are doing Grand Tours and that we are fighting for the win, that also brings a lot of rest and confidence in the team and also with us with the coaches that we know what to do and I think on that way it doesn't surprise us where we are at this moment. No, I don't think so, because Jonas is the best climber, and on that way when you can bring him as a team in a position then he can win. But of course, you have some individuals that grow above himself, and like Tim developed himself really well, and of course everybody. He's really visible with the way how he expresses himself when he was pulling in front, and a lot of people, it was all over the internet, so then it's also visible. Bart Lemmer was with the best 10 climbers. He also rose above himself, so that was good to see. Davide is where we expected him to be, part of the best 10 climbers. He's part of the best 5-4 climbers of this race, so there he also is better than we expected, but for the rest... We are where we wanted to be, and what we also expected, actually.
I think apart from Wilco, correct me if I'm wrong, but the strategy we talked about in Bulgaria, staying further back, I mean, you haven't had many crashes. I mean, I think it was a theme last year with Simon. You guys didn't have many crashes, did you? And that's absolutely key for a team, isn't it, in a Grand Tour, if you can make that happen.
Yeah, that's true. Only Wilco and Tim crashed that stage too. But in general, there were not so many crashes this Giro, some individuals, and then stage two, of course, a major crash. But maybe that's the way how we did it in the sprint stage to back off. That also influenced other GC teams. While it was less hectic in front, while there were then less crashes, it is a possibility. I mean, there are a lot of factors, of course, that are playing a role there. But of course, when this already adds a little bit to that, that's only good, I think. And on that way, we believe, and also over the last couple of years, I think that was only one or two times that a GC leader lost some time because of a crash on a flat stage. And all the rest, you just stayed. There was nothing happening. So it's also, why should you spend then all that energy and search for the risk? While this is not something where you're not anyway not going to do something in that day, then you leave it up to the sprinters, and there's more space over there, less stress for them as well. So I think it's only a beneficial for cycling in general.
Just last thing, Mark. Obviously, you've had experience with the Tour, the Vuelta. I guess you were at the Vuelta last year, weren't you, with Jonas?
The year before, and in 23 I was there, yeah.
I mean, this is maybe simplifying things, but people always sort of ask, well, okay, what's the difference in... the three, and thinking of metrics like total stress score and this Giro d'Italia, things like that, the TSS or just the difficulty level in general compared to a Tour de France. I mean, has it been a lot less taxing than a Tour de France for Jonas, or a Vuelta for Jonas?
No, in terms of stress, yes, but that's also part of the approach that we had, of course, because of the sprint stages that we backed off, how the race has been built over the last couple of 3 weeks, or how the stages were set up in front of the race. The climbs are quite some steeper than how it is in the Tour, and if you compare it to the Vuelta, it's quite similar, but the climbs here are longer. So also there's a difference between the three. The stress is higher in the Tour because the expectations of press. I mean, you see it also here now. It's relatively calm in the Tour. It's full of people. It's before and also after. The press is more there. There are more people able to follow it. More people do have an opinion about things that happen in the Tour. So yeah, in that way, the Tour is a bigger event than the other three. And this one is quite relaxed. It's maybe a bit similar to the Vuelta, where the Vuelta is just having more straightforward roads, more straightforward stages. Here you pass more the villages, the narrow passages, the narrow climbs, the narrow roads. So that is a bit. And every Grand Tour, it also depends a bit on how you approach it, how hard you want to make the race, in terms of TSS, in terms of how much energy you put in it. And yeah, if you look to how we went through this race, also with our riders, I think we did it on a really balanced way, that we pick a few stages. That is where we want to go for as a team. And all the rest, we could save ourselves also. And I think that was the right approach. And also in the race, how we... came now in the situation where we are.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car, the back of the pack, please.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Over time, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and 2x the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.
So there you go, Palacci. I mean, maybe I'm being a bit liberal with my interpretation of what Mark said here, but and I don't want to over-egg it by saying that, well, basically every day apart from those few stages that they chose to target and win was a rest day, because of course it can't be a rest day sitting in the peloton of the Grand Tour. But the point remains, and we talked about it yesterday, that there weren't many chaos elements on other days that could have upset Visma, Lisa bike or destabilize them or force them to sort of rip up their plan and do something different. And that's why I made the point I did about UAE and Adam Yates. And, you know, we know how that team races very aggressively. And there wasn't really anyone to do that. I mean, we saw other strong teams. We saw Decathlon, we saw Red Bull, we saw Net Company, Ineos. In small phases of the race, they would come to the front in the name of their own sort of personal GC ambitions, but it was nothing that put Visma on the back foot. And one of the sort of, I suppose, regrettable things about this Giro, and we said it I think yesterday, was that I don't think there's been apart from those maybe how many minutes or seconds was Pellizzari on Vingegaard's back wheel on Blockhouse? Was it a
maybe
minute?
90 seconds? Yeah.
Maybe 90 seconds. And during those 90 seconds, there was maybe the question, is this going to be the Grand Tour where Giulio Pellizzari establishes himself in the top tier of Grand Tour riders? And are we going to have a real battle between those two? And it ended after 90 seconds. And in no other stage did we have any suspense as far as the GC, as far as the winner of the GC was concerned.
Absolutely not. And maybe it's right. There is no contenders. No one is at the tier of Jonas Vingegaard outside of Pogacar. But now, for the Tour de France, Visma Lisebike, they're bringing the Avengers on. They got Jorgensen, Van Aert, Armirail, Affini, big rulers, big guys. Domestiques on the climbs as well. I can't wait. I can't wait for the Tour de France now.
Palacci, has this Giro changed your impression of where Vingegaard is likely to sit compared to Pogacar?
Not much, actually, not much. He did everything in a very Vingegaardian way at the Giro. I think we have not discovered much new about Vingegaard, if not the fact that his build-up to the Giro, to the Tour de France, can be better with the Giro. He has been riding three World Tour stage races this year, Vingegaard. He's won all of them. Paris-Nice, Catalunya, and now the Giro. Has to mean something, right? Has to have a value.
But actually, how much do you think the Italians have taken to Vingegaard?
Not much, actually. Not much.
Not enough ciclismo.
No, he is not the sort of character who accende.
Turns on or ignites.
Exactly. I think the Italians, in opposition to Pogacar, they went in 2024, they went to the roads of the Giro to see Pogacar. This time, they went to the roads of the Giro, they sort of packed the streets of the Giro d'Italia, the climbs, to see the Giro, not to see Vingegaard. Know what I mean?
Yeah. This is a huge generalization that I'm about to throw at you. But one Italian teacher that I once had told me that Italians don't trust people who speak quietly. They think there's something shady, there's something shifty about them. A huge, huge generalization. But would you say, from your vantage point as an inside man, as an Italian yourself, would you say that more than other nationalities, more than other populations, the Italians are more comfortable with extroverts?
I will agree. I will totally agree. And it's interesting how at Visma Lizabike they are growing up another introvert, Davide Pigenzoli, right? We made the comparison, Pogacar, Vingegaard with Pellizzari and Pigenzoli. Pigenzoli, he is someone who said that on the Passo Giao, Vingegaard would have worked for him to win, for him, Pigenzoli, to win on Piani di Pezze. So these guys, these sort of soft-spoken, timidy, shy.
Yeah, shy. Is he that shy? Yesterday he came into the mix zone and he had a swagger and he'd caught someone's eye and he was sort of performing for someone. But, I mean, just in those 2 seconds yesterday, I thought, oh, maybe I've misjudged Pigenzoli. Huh. Maybe he's actually got a lot more sort of Pelaccian energy than I thought. Yeah.
Interesting. But these introverts at Visma Lizabike, they have conquered the Giro. Maybe not yet conquer the hearts of the Italians. Maybe they will come back and be exactly that. More of a personality, more of a eye catcher, more of a center of the stage type of personas.
Are you worried about Pellizzari?
I'm not. I think he's just fine. You know, it's a bit of a... Did we say this already? Is how this Giro d'Italia for Pellizzari has been a Bildungsroman, right? For him? Yeah. Sort of a romanzo di formazione.
Coming of age story.
And he has to grow. He still has to grow. Super young. I think he's was born in November 2003. So let's give him time.
Yeah. It's a question we'll never get an answer to, but I do wonder whether Blockhouse, by trying to follow Vingegaard, he put such strain on his body and went over his limit that then contributed to him getting ill. I mean, we know that a lot of the rebel riders got ill, and I don't know who the first person to get ill was, but maybe, you know, he did put an undue strain on himself there. In terms of, you know, I asked you a minute ago, has this Giro changed your perspective of where Vingegaard sits compared to Pogacar? What other riders have gone into a different dimension with this Giro, or which riders have stayed where we regarded them before the Giro? I mean, I'll give you a couple of names straight away. Paul Magnier is an obvious one. Paul Magnier's sort of stake to claim to be considered in the top three or four sprinters in the world, and we might yet discover in the next few months that he is in fact the best sprinter in the world. But it's difficult when the absolute best guys aren't there, and of course Tim Merlier, his teammate, is another one who could definitely stake a claim to that title. So that's difficult to know, but certainly he's delivered on the promise that we saw from him at the end of last year after a difficult spring. So it was an unqualified success for Magnier. Eulalio, certainly he's been a breakthrough rider, revelation. Thinking about the GC riders and the guys who finished on the podium as well, Hindley, another really solid Grand Tour for him. I mean, he was just off the podium in the Vuelta last year, but he's delivering a sort of standard of performance in GCs that is not matched by many of the riders in the World Tour, is it? I mean, we've seen other, you know, Ben O'Connor came into this Giro with big objectives, and his performances have been a lot more up and down in general classification. Hindley, we talk about tiers. Hindley sits right beneath. Well, we've got Pogacar, then we've got Vingegaard, and Hindley is really the next tier, isn't he?
Yep. I think so. one of the guy who's just scrapping the surface of what he can be, of what a good star can be in the future, I think, is Thomas Silva. We saw how he was going almost over every climb as a sprinter or the Juanma Velhoche. I think the best comparison we can make is maybe early Diego Ulissi and how fast he was, how you couldn't like shake him off. They are teammates now. I think Thomas Silva can be a very good, very, very good rider in the future. Maybe type of world champion type of rider.
Yeah. Crescioli, another one who's had a good Giro d'Italia. I mean, we're gonna do a bit of a quick fire round later. We're gonna give some of our sort of best stage. We're gonna maybe name our revelation best newcomer of a Giro. So we'll park that just now. But actually, just going back to talk about the Giro as a whole, and I don't know whether this is the time to give wine glasses, prosciutti, but just thinking about whether this has been a good edition of Giro d'Italia or not, and if not, why not? Where should we start with this? I mean, I said in my summary there that the juxtaposition that's defined this has been the great breakaway stage is really exciting, fantastic, and the GC really existing apart from that, and there haven't been many times when the two have overlapped. Piani di Pezzer was one occasion, but on most of the occasions when we've had really exciting breakaway battles, the GC riders have almost had a day off.
After the stage one in Bulgaria, Daniele, you were so ready to give to this Giro, the whole Giro, one glass of wine. You were so ready. You were sending out the tweet. I said, wait a minute. And what we got was exactly explained. Mm. As you said, I think one thing that should be noted is the fact that in contrast to last year we had a pretty solid Giro that was revamped by two unforgettable stages, two at least. I'm referring to stage to Siena, Van Aert versus Del Toro, that huge Van Aert win, and of course stage 20 to Sestriere with the Colle delle Finestre, Simon Yates, all the redemption story. We had very good ciclismo stages such as San Valentino di Brentonico last year, but at least two unforgettable. How many unforgettable stages we had this year? I would say zero. We had super a huge number of Velociclismo stages, but the really unforgettable ones, maybe zero.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It's not an addition. Unfortunately for Jonas Vingegaard, I don't think he really cares, neither should he care, but it's not an addition that's necessarily going to live that long in the memory, but it is an addition that has entertained us in small bursts and also beguiled us, Pelacci, with a sort of the visual treat that's been provided by the fact that we've had fantastic weather over the last two and a half weeks, and you know, we've driven the route a couple of times in the last week, and it's very easy when you're just looking at the profiles and basing your judgments on the profiles to criticise the route design. The route design is like Stefano Alocchio and whoever else is involved in the route design. What I felt, particularly yesterday when we were driving through Friuli and a couple of other days earlier this week as well, was it becomes much easier to understand why they've made some of the choices they've made, because it's not just about what we see on TV, it's also about the villages they go through and how the Giro is going to be hosted and received in those places. And on that score, again, helped by the weather, I mean, it's been a fantastic advert for Italy and a fantastic advert for the Giro d'Italia over the last week to 10 days.
You're correct. And I think also because of the pure intrinsic Italian chaos. You take, for example, the crazy stage with Eulalio and Arrieta to Potenza, or the motorbike casino in Milano. Thanks to these stages, we had lots of entertainment, which was super fun. That lasted one day, right? Which was enough for most of us, for most of our sort of amore for the Giro, right? Love for the Giro. But yeah, when you look back at the whole entirety of it, I don't know, probably for the entire Giro, I can't give more than three prosciutti. Even if we liked, you know, the sum of the parts is not that high, but the parts were pretty good.
Yeah. I don't usually give away my wine glass rating on the podcast. I usually wait until... I can do it now, because this podcast is going to come out after the last stage is finished. So I'm going to give it three as well. I don't know.
It's fine, huh?
It's fine. Yeah, I don't know. Look, whatever I choose, it's always controversial. People always complain. And because I sort of lay out the last 25 years, and people always say, well, that's three, how come that's three as well, or how come that's lower and that was much better? Anyway, three is what I'm giving it, Pellacci. And again, as I said before, as I said earlier on in the Giro, I'll never give away the formula. I'll never give away the criteria. So I can't lose. I cannot lose. Michele, we're going to be back in part three with some of our highlights of the Giro d'Italia. But before that, I think we're going to hear some other people's highlights and also lowlights, things they've not liked about this Giro d'Italia. So that's coming. Giro. Penultimate day, we're nearly there. We're nearly there. I want your best and worst of this Giro d'Italia. What have you liked and what have you not liked about the Giro?
I would have liked to have more Italian highlights from my point of view, especially in terms of overall. Because obviously, you know that for Giulio Pellizzari, this Giro has been very difficult. After last year, 6 in the Giro and 6 in Vuelta, 1 year later, I would have expected him on the podium. So this is the thing that I like the worst for him. It has been a very difficult Giro, and I think that inside the team, they should understand maybe what haven't worked in a certain way. Maybe he has been ill for some stages, but also maybe his preparation, I don't know, he was already strong early February in Valenciana. He arrived the 13th in Tirreno Adriatico. He won a Tour of the Alps, so maybe he arrived at this Giro maybe with a shape that was going down.
Giro, maybe it was a mistake to make him sleep at 3,200 meters in Valsenales with Ötzi the Iceman before the Giro d'Italia.
Well, about this, I spoke with all the coaches and trainers. For example, I spoke frequently with Paolo Slongo, former Nibali's coach, now actual coach of Elisa Longo Borghini, and I already always told him that, in my opinion, this kind of training camp need to be done at level of the sea, maybe also below the sea, you know, but not at 3,200 meters. Concerning what I liked the most, performance of Afonso Elaulio has been really a complete surprise for me. I never expected this from him.
I don't think we found the new Pogacar in this Giro, have we? Or even the new Vingegaard.
No, definitely not. Not for this edition.
Maybe we found the Pogacar of podcasting, Michele Pellacci.
Maybe, but it's impossible to reach my level. This important is that Michele knows his limits. He knows, or he thinks that he can overlap me.
He's the Piganzol.
Sean Flynn, Team Picnic, post NL Raisin. It's my first Giro, and now should I finish tomorrow in Rome? I finished all three Grand Tours, so I think for me that's the nicest thing to have been able to experience. I was involved in the big crash in Bulgaria. Initially, then it was then it's always going to be a bit of a battle for a few days. Yeah, it's always tough when you crash early in a Grand Tour like that.
I'm Rasmus Novak Franklin. I'm a journalist at the Danish cycling media Filtl. I think I'll start with the... I always learn to start with the negatives, because then we can end up on a positive note, right? I think that's better. The negativity of this Giro has to be like the predictability of the outcome. I mean, we all knew that Jonas was going to win this race, but there has been, like, the biggest drama was today when he had to stop to fix his bike. I mean, I thought for myself, that's the biggest drama, the only like little tiny hole in his armor we've seen throughout this entire race, and it was nothing. So yeah, the predictability of the race in GC wise has to be it. I mean, then I was very thrilled yesterday to see G get up the road and try something, and Stora likewise, because that was like the first proper GC action I think we have seen. And also like these breakaway royales, we haven't seen that too much either. Yesterday we had it, which was very good, but besides that, we haven't seen these big climbers get up the road too much. That's probably what I haven't liked about this this race-wise.
And what have you liked?
Well, I have liked that I feel I have now, this is only like my second Grand Tour. I did the Tour de France last year, and I've done some racing in Denmark. And what I like, feel like everything is properly sized this Giro. Like the crowds are properly sized for a race. The towns are appreciative of getting the race here. We have stayed in a lot of the towns where the riders have finished. And in almost every city, there's been partying going on after the Giro left. And I like this sort of like appreciativeness. They don't take it for granted. They host an event in the city and people dance all night long after the race has left, which is good because often I feel like with the tour, the circus just leaves town and then moves on.
Jack Haig, Netcompany Ineos. Lowlights pretty easy. Was that one stage where we had all that diabolical rain? I got so cold on this stage, and that's up there with probably top four worst days I've had on the bike.
I think when we spoke before, it was top three. Yeah. It's been relegated.
This is the problem, that generally the same thing happens when you finish the Grand Tour and you say, oh, that was horrible, I never want to do one of them again. Then a week later, you're like, oh, actually, you know what? Welter doesn't sound too bad. So you asked me in Welter, and I'll say it was my like top 10 worst day in the bike, because something else will pop up. The stage in Swiss I really enjoyed, to be honest. Switzerland's like a beautiful country. The roads are very nice. It was quite a short stage. Tom and Egon had a very good day, and we finished on an airstrip. The buses were parked on an airstrip where we'd finished a stage of Tour of Swiss, where Christel Jensen was a teammate of mine and he won. I enjoyed that day. That was a really nice day.
Did you hear the banging official stage anthem that was produced for that stage? I'll send it to you. It's captured everyone's imagination. We played it in our podcast a few days ago. I had sort of 20 people saying they can't get it out of their head. So, I'll share it with you later.
I haven't heard of it, mate. Actually, you sent it to me.
So my name is Andrea Mifsud and I'm from Team Polti Visit Malta. The best thing is to ride across all Italy. Basically, we came from the south to the north, and feeling the spirit of the Giro and the people around the race is just amazing. And some days are really hard, but it makes feel you alive. So it's just super.
And the worst thing?
There is no worst thing, in my opinion.
Christopher Jule Jensen, Team Jayco Alula. I'd say the worst was when we lost Andrea Vandrama to a crash in Bulgaria, and also Felix Engelhardt a couple of days later to illness after what was potentially one of the worst weather stages I've done in a while in the Giro, stage 5. So they were on four. They were bad memories. Also, because we'd hoped that those two riders, you know, they could have played a role in stage hunting throughout the last 3 weeks. And I think the best is, I mean, obviously Ben's result on Blockhouse, but doing a Grand Tour on this team, especially, I mean, it's always a good journey with ups and downs. But you know, we're able to sort of. Carry ourselves through it, and now I just hope that we can finish off with a bang the next two days in the mountains.
Johannes Kohlstedt, rider for UNOX Mobility.
The highlight must be when we heard on the radio that Frederik won in Milano, 100% the highlight, and then off the bike it's just been really good atmosphere in the team the whole way, and yeah, we had some bad lucks and ups and downs, but it's in general been super good mood, so yeah.
And what's been the thing you've hated about this Giro d'Italia that you've not enjoyed?
Going empty at the end of stages. In general, just that the breakaway hasn't been... The only proper breakaway stage was on stage 17 when Valgren won in front of Leknesund. Rest of it has been like really small gaps. So that's a bit shit that it's not been like this normal breakaway stages with big breaks and stuff.
Gregor Braun, Flow Bikes. Outside of an auto grill here on the Autostrada, coffee and car, wine at the dinner table, this summarizes my Giro d'Italia 2026. Going to new places on the boot here in the Mediterranean, discovering new corners of the country, Italy, I haven't yet visited, or going back to places I visited several times, including Blockhaus, but Sepp Kuss did it, taking a victory in his third Grand Tour, now having a stage victory in all three Grand Tours, and did it in the most beautiful setting up there in the Dolomites, with his mom watching as well, having arrived to cheer on for her young Seppi. And Sepp, you could see it when I interviewed him there in the mix zone afterwards. His voice is breaking up. The emotions were coming through. And I was getting a bit emotional too for Sepp, and knowing how much that victory meant for him. Those are the highlights of my 2026 Giro d'Italia. Lowlights, I think too much time in the car. I looked at my odometer here, 5,500 kilometers, and that's just driving in Italy, not to mention the Bulgarian stages. The Grand Tour organizers need to get their house in order. This is too much. Too much transfers, too much fossil fuel burned, too much. And everybody's fed up with it. I'm fed up with it. But you know what? It gives us enough time in the car to listen to the cycling podcast, to sip on sweet Italian coffees, and think about where we're going to rest for the night and where we're going to dine and pour a glass of wine.
So Johannes Dalmitet from Team Decathlon CMA CGM. The best thing, the group we have here, amazing group of guys, even day 19 now, so much fun, and I think we'll still have three more days of fun.
Worst thing about this Giro d'Italia?
Honestly, I love it.
There must be one thing. Your day you've hated. What's the worst moment you've had on the bike? Something.
Worst moment I had on the bike. Yeah, honestly, the Potenza stage where Ari won. That was a bit of a rough time. Starting that climb in the rain, hail, and then, I don't know, 200 kilometers or something to the finish. That was a little bit of torture. But overall, it's great. Yeah. Oh no, sorry. Worst thing. So Italians, they don't want to turn their aircon on until summer. And I don't know what the definition of summer is, if it's some summer months or whatever. But for me, when you have 35 degrees during the day, that is summer.
Are we talking about hotel rooms here?
Hotel rooms without aircon. This is the worst thing about the Giro. This is for sure.
Do you have a roommate, or are you on your own?
I'm with Callum Scotson.
Okay, and he agrees, presumably.
Callum is extremely conscious about temperatures and lights, so I'm well taken care of.
Pelacci, some wonderful contributions there from people. A lot of people who have contributed over the course of 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of our favourites there. Jack Haig, Larry.
Oh, yeah.
Ciro.
Interviewees were all amazing, yeah. I think.
They weren't all amazing. We made a vow at the start of the podcast to be transparent and honest. They weren't all amazing. No. Some were fine.
Yeah.
Some were fine. No one was terrible. No. Some were fine. But in all seriousness, thank you to everyone always who gives us the time of day when they see the Cycling Podcast microphone and they head in our direction and they regale us with their insights. Without them, this show, if you can call it that, would not be what it is. But actually, instead of just doing general best and worst, which is maybe a bit too general, I thought we'd do a bit of a quick fire stage, break it down into categories, and we are going to do best and worst, but in specific categories. So I'm going to start with best stage. What's your best stage?
I have to go with stage 19 on the Dolomites, one that was won by Sepp Kuss. This one is by put that stage on a leash, but I had to say, Daniele.
Was it the northwest face of the Monte Civetta?
Exactly. So we had the debate. We had Buzzati quotes. We had the debate.
Why on my puffer jacket it doesn't say northwest? The northwest face. It says north face.
Listen, I was right on that one, and you were wrong. But let's not go right back to it. But the Dolomites, climbing Passo Giau, one of my favorite ones in the world. What a glorious day it was.
Yeah, it was glorious. And that was one of the few days when we had that sort of overlapping of the battle for the stage and the GC. A lot of things happening. A lot of things going on all day. Vero ciclismo, wasn't it? No one could dispute that was vero ciclismo.
Yep.
But actually, I'm going to go for a left field option.
Mm.
I'm going to go way, way back in time and way back down Italy to Cosenza, the first day back in Italy, deep in Calabria. And we got a day of Velociclismo that we didn't necessarily expect, thanks to Movistar, thanks to them putting the pressure on that climb, Cozzotunno, unforgettable name of a climb. And then we had a great finale. The Baron and I, Brian, standing at the side of the road in the supermarket car park watching. It's always a thrill watching the peloton go past. It was a very reduced peloton at that point. But Movistar had really taken the race by the scruff of the neck. But then they would be denied because we had Jonathan Narvaez winning the stage ahead of Luis Aulard. We also had a pink pink jersey for an Italian, which is a bit of a
corner,
which was a rarity these days. It was another, it was a beautiful day, I think, at the end of the day. Certainly it was a beautiful day. And it was one of these confounding days, surprising days you don't necessarily expect. And as I said at the time, teams like Movistar, when they do something like that, when they show a lot of initiative, they always get criticized when it doesn't work out. But I don't think they should be, because you have to buy a ticket to win the lottery, and they bought a ticket that day. So that would be my favorite stage.
On the other side of the medal, Daniele, what was your worst stage?
Worst stage was the very first stage in Bulgaria. It was a bit of a stinker. It was exactly in our preview what I said I didn't want to see from the Giro d'Italia. No offense to Bandianismo, no offense to Polti Visit Malta, but I said I didn't want to see a lot of flat stages where it was a rider from those two teams. I can't remember which riders it was, maybe Tarozzi.
Tarozzi, Sevilla maybe as well.
Yeah, going down the road and then just a routine bunch sprint. And that's what we got that day. Look, we were bright-eyed and full of excitement and anticipation for what was still to come in the Giro d'Italia. So we sort of gave them a pass that day. We gave the peloton a pass. But I'm glad we didn't have too many more days like that.
It was not super exciting, you're right. And stage 20 is that sort of most disappointing one for me to Piancavallo yesterday, because of how predictable it all was. Very good day on the Friuli Mountains, but a bit too much boredom for me.
Yeah. Although we had a wonderful drive on the route yesterday.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Getting to know a part of Friuli that we didn't, neither of us knew particularly well. These wonderful exotic place names that don't look as though they're anything to do with Italian. They have any relationship at all with Italian. Lots of place names ending in S and local delicacies with, again, very strange names. And the people were out at the side of the road in full colour. And it was a fantastic atmosphere, and certainly a taster for both of us of a region, a part of Friuli that we would both like to return to for various reasons.
Should we give away right away the most beautiful place award?
Go on.
I'm going for Daniele. I fell in love with Verbania. Verbania was amazing. The two parts that sort of composed the city, Intra and Pallanza. You remember that? I got on the boat to go from the press room to the finish line that day. That was fantastic because it was sunny. You could see, you know, mountains surrounding the lake. I had fun that day. And I've never been to neither Lago Maggiore nor Verbania. Mm. So that was fantastic for me.
Well, actually, I am going to go for somewhere we stayed, really. It wasn't somewhere that the race went through, but when we stayed in Civita, the little Albanian enclave right down there in the mountains, close to Cosenza, not too far from Cosenza, in Calabria. It's a wild part, a beautiful wild part of Calabria, and we'd stayed there before, but I had a fantastic run that day up on the ridge, and it made me want to go back and explore that really wild part of Calabria. And one thing, you know, I prefer the north to the south in Italy, generally speaking, but what you do get in the south is a sense of wilderness and a sense of the unexplored and a sense of the underdeveloped that it's quite hard to find. Maybe yesterday we got a little bit of that in Friuli, in very sparsely populated part of Friuli, but generally speaking you only find that in the south. So I would say there were the sort of pockets. We always discover new places. I mean, I've done this race many, many times now, so I like to think I know Italy pretty much inside out, but we always discover new places, new, whether it's sort of valleys, just singular valleys, sub-regions of places that we've been to before. But again, it was helped so much by the weather this year, when Italy at this time of year is just glorious. Luminous and glorious. Yesterday, when we went to Ottavio Bottecchi's, well, not his resting place, but where whatever occurred that led to his death occurred, That was very beautiful as well.
Oh, wow. You're correct. Speaking of sort of this spring or new moments and shiny stuff.
Oh, no. Do you know what? I've got... Can I rectify?
Sure.
Can I march myself off to Corrections Corner? The other place, Le Marche, extraordinary. Oh, wow. We stayed near Ostra, and I talked the day before about the light quality in the Marche, how it can be sensational, and how for even someone who wears contact lenses with quite a strong prescription and it generally doesn't have very good eyesight, it's almost as though you've had laser therapy overnight and you wake up in Le Marche and everything is just in HD and it's full of colour, the poppies, the mountains on the horizon, the sort of rippling fields, just needed to be seen to be believed, Palacci. That morning, in just outside Ostra, San Marcello, I think it was called.
In Le Marche, you can go from skiing station to the sea in 1 hour.
Mm.
One of the most underrated regions in Italy, Le Marche, of course. But should we get to the best newcomer revelation? We said a bit about it already, right? Crescioli, Thomas Silva. You got other names, maybe?
Eulalio is the obvious one.
Has to be.
I would say. It would be. It's a tough fight between him. Can we call Manier a newcomer, a discovery? I'm not really sure. Tim Rex was another one.
Mm-hmm. Good pick.
Who really sort of distinguished himself. Crescioli, we've already mentioned. There were other sort of fairly notable performances from riders that we'd not seen much of before. Certainly not a newcomer, but a rider who showed something of himself that we had not seen before, Gregor Mühlberger, at 32 years of age. He was a revelation of sorts for Decathlon.
Let's move on to this is an interesting one. Best interviewee. I've got a pretty solid... We talked to the guy, but we could have talked to him much more because Andreas Leknesund, this chap was every single time we were seeing him.
He was a very willing interviewee, wasn't he?
We could have talked to him in the mix zone or at the finish line forever. Probably could have written, I don't know, a biography of Leknesund during this Giro d'Italia.
Also from his team, Johannes Kuhlse, I got to know him a bit at this Giro d'Italia and was very pleasantly surprised by how talkative and how animated he was. But I'm going to give it to... I mean, Larry, it goes without saying. It goes without saying that Larry is unassailable as the best interviewee in any race. So we're going to put him in a category of his own. But I am going to say another Scandinavian, Johannes Staunemitter, who was very, very entertaining. He comes in with great energy whenever you have to speak to him or you want to speak to him in the mix zone. He sort of bowls in bright-eyed, shakes your hand, sometimes gives you a... I don't really do fist bumps with riders, but he wants to do a fist bump when he does an interview. So very entertaining. You know, Grand Tours, they can be quite grueling or certainly tiring. And when you see and have a conversation with a rider like that who's full of energy, full of life... It's a bit of a shot in the arm is the wrong... That's not a metaphor that I should use in cycling. No. But it always gives you a bit of a boost. Similarly, Palacci, also really enjoyed speaking to Mifsud of Polti Visit Malta. We talked about his association, his obsession with René Vietor and the history of professional cycling. But also someone who was very conscious that he was part of, just by participating in the Giro d'Italia, part of history and part of a wonderful event that goes around, an event that's kind of unique in the sporting world, or Grand Tours are kind of unique in the sporting world. And he saw this as a real privilege and he wanted to enjoy it and savour it and cherish it. And that's what he did. And you know, and that's what we try and do every year.
It's good when cyclists can... It's rare, I would say, when cyclists can put their career and their sort of moment in their career into perspective and a bigger picture as well. Daniele, how about best meal?
I think this is probably quite an easy one, Palacci. It was the night we spent with our listener friend Simon Roberts in Canelli at the Ristorante Civico 15. Civico 15. We had a wonderful meal, wonderful food. We had a lovely Barolo wine, wonderful company, wonderful hospitality from Simon and his wife Alexis. So that was the definite highlight for me.
Perfect. I think, Daniele, I have to go with... You're correct. I have had great breakfasts because most of the time we don't get lunch until 3, 3 and a half in the afternoon or 4, or we skip lunch altogether. So we had to have big breakfasts. I had one this morning and that was glorious in the outskirts of Conegliano. Everything was cooked at the moment. They made
me sweet pancakes with honey, fruit. I learned also a new word.
Go on.
In Italian, it's arillo or aril, arillus in English, which is sort of the edible seed of the pomegranate.
Ah,
interesting.
Ah. We should say where this was. This was at La Ghiandaia Farmhouse. We stayed there 2 days right at the end of the Giro, and that was definitely one of the highlights in terms of accommodation. Really, really beautiful place, just outside Cornigliano in Prosecco country. But actually, we should wind this up now, but you got me thinking, actually, what was your best run?
Wow.
Not when you had the best legs. Not when you put those 3 seconds into me at the top of that 15-kilometer climb, but I'm just in terms of landscape and what we saw.
Well, I have to go with, maybe that day on the Val d'Abbiadene hill, Daniele. Val d'Abbiadene is a place that I've been to several times, but going up, seeing Monte Grappa, that was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, very beautiful. What was my... do you know what, Pelacci? We've been there a few times now, and I think with you, we've run up there twice. Capriglia behind Pietrasanta. Wow. That was... it's a climb that suits me, you know. It suits me, hence the, you know...
Using gradients.
Hence the beating that you took that day. But no, I very much enjoyed our runs together. Again, you were an effervescent companion, as with the podcast. I think, best Pelacciata, I'll give that as well. Because we are in Verona Airport, so the best example of Michele Pelacci
random
humour, but mainly randomness. It was, I think, when our car deserted, sort of let us down about a week ago, and we had to jump through various hoops to get back to Verona Airport, get a new car. There were no cars left, so they only had a Fiat Cinquecento to offer us, and I was slightly aghast at this, and I looked at the agent who was a Maggiore, and said, surely you've got something better. And Pelacci, you sort of looked at me excitedly, expectantly, and then you looked back at the agent and you said, does it have snow chains or snow tires?
No tires.
And I was just left speechless by this, because nowhere on our itinerary for the next week was there going to be anywhere where snow tires would be remotely useful or necessary.
I did that in abundance of precaution, Daniele. That was not very intelligent for my part, I must admit. I think the best Pelacciata was probably just going to the Bardiani bus for me almost every day. Going there, got some stories, interviews.
I never figured. Were you doing interviews? I never really figured it out. I mean, you were always in the kitchen, but nothing. Were you ever cooking?
Always there to cook.
One of Pelacci's many nicknames on this Giro d'Italia has been Carlo Cracco, who's probably the most famous Michelin-starred chef in Italy. But he's always in the kitchen. Always in the kitchen. Whether the oven's on or not, that depends on the day. Michele, we were gonna do some listener questions. We're gonna save the listener questions because we think we're gonna cook up an episode of all of the remaining, or all of them that a couple unfortunately might slip through the net because they've arrived in various different places, which is my fault. I asked for them on Instagram, Strava, etc. But we'll try to get to a lot of them in a special episode that we're going to do in the next couple of days. We're also going to do a reading list of books that we've mentioned along the way, or other books that might be useful if you've enjoyed our sort of cultural, historical, and sort of ciclistico voyage around Italy. So
Vero Ciclismo classification are coming.
Yeah.
Explanations. The formula will be still cryptic.
Yeah. But Pelacci, this is the end. Otherwise, this is the end. Almost the end, because I'm going to finish it with some thanks. In chronological order, well, you actually came in first in Bulgaria, but you're still here with me, so I will thank Il Barone, Brian Nygaard, for his fantastic stint in the first/second week. Il Barone's insights and his class and his elegance, big part of our coverage as ever on the Giro d'Italia. So thank you very much, Brian, for the time that you spent with me this year. You overlapped a little bit with Pelacci. And Pelacci, you've been yet again a revelation. You've been a revelation. I know I'm tough on you. I'm tough on you every day. Sometimes I think I should be even tougher. But listen, you've excelled, and I think you've earned a place in the listeners' hearts. You've charmed them in the same way that you seem to charm everyone you meet. So thank you very much for your company. And you've also been very easy to be around and sort of mentor, shall we say. over the last few days.
No, listen, the Cycling Podcast has been the coolest experience of the years again for me. So thank you, Daniele. Thank you to Barone. Thank you to the producer. Thank you to the listeners. Of course, they're the main thing. That's why we do this. Thanks to them, we were able to do this. Without them, we would not be here.
Well, yeah, it bears repeating. It bears repeating, particularly friends of the podcast, those of you who contribute financially to what we do. This is why we can do the Grand Tours on the ground. If you want to become a friend of the podcast, cyclingpodcast.com, you can find all the information you need there. But actually, last round of thanks before we play out with something very special. starting at the top of our episode, Silvia Bertaldo, she does the jingles, she provides the voice for our jingles at the start of episodes and for our various little regular segments. I'm going to thank Larry, of course. Larry's been an almost daily presence on the podcast this year, which has been absolutely fantastic, and he's ridden a great Giro d'Italia as well. So well done, Larry, and thank you very much for the time we've shared with you over the last 3 weeks. Our producers, of course, who've done an amazing job getting the episodes uploaded very early on in the evenings so that people can enjoy them. Yep. Adam Bowie, Hugh Owen, John Mooney and Tom Wally, who I think is producing this episode. Of course, I've got to thank Lionel back in the UK for keeping things ticking over back there, providing support. Our music, the music that's also a big part of our podcast on the Giro d'Italia every year from Amara Terra. I haven't mentioned them enough this year as much as I should have, but fantastic to have them on board as always. Audio Boom for sort of hosting our podcasts, providing all the technology, Bellacci,
which I don't know anything about,
nor do I. But I know that without them we could not do it. Bellacci, I'm going to thank a couple of people at RCS Sport as well, Martina Centomo and Valerio Bianco for helping us, and Carlo Malvestio as well.
Yep.
For helping us every morning to coordinate interviews. Their help has been invaluable. Simon Roberts, I've already mentioned, for his hospitality when we went to Canelli. Can't overstate how much we enjoyed that. Gregor Brown, who from Flow Bikes, who we've travelled with most of the time, and we've enjoyed, as we always do, spending time with Gregor, and has helped us out with logistical things along the way. And yes, lastly, Pelacci, I'm going to thank the listeners as well, who, and particularly with their feedback over the last 3 weeks and their questions, we've tried to make the podcast a little bit more interactive, and they have responded. Wow, have they responded with a lot of fantastic questions and comments. So thank you very much for being along for the ride. I said we're going to finish with something special, Pelacci. Unfortunately, one of the requests that I've had from many listeners that I haven't really been able to satisfy over the last few days is this clamour for the anthem, the Cari anthem. So I'm going to leave you with an invitation to join us on our journey away from the Giro d'Italia in the car with the Cari anthem playing us out.
Yeah, what an anthem, what a song, what a
Giro.
What a moment, what a ciclismo.
Grazie mille, Michele.
Ciao.
Oh! Mani al cielo, Pelacci!
Questa è la montagna! Questo è il Giro d'Italia!
Dalle pianure fino sopra il mondo, sale la corsa col suo fuoco profondo, tra le montagne che non mollano mai. Oggi la storia si ferma, cari, le bandiere gridano nel vento, la valle esplode in un solo momento. Rosso il cuore, rosa la follia, qui batte forte la Leventina. Pedala, pedala, contro il cielo e la fatica. Respira, respira, questa notte è infinita, il Ticino canta forte. Non vi fermerete mai, perché chi arriva fino a Cari diventa leggenda ormai. Cari, Cari, la montagna è qui, il Giro d'Italia sale fino a noi. Cari, Cari, il cuore batte così, tra Svizzera e Italia siamo eroi. Con il vento addosso, con il fuoco dentro, mille voci in coro che si sentono.
Ogni tornante è una battaglia vera, ogni salita accende la bandiera. La gente spinge con gli occhi e col cuore, qui nasce il sogno di ogni corridore. Le ruote graffiano forte la strada, la neve guarda dall'ultima cima. Sentire questo boato attraversa il confine, dall'Italia fino al Gottardo, questa corsa vale tutto, perché il rosa non è un colore, è il coraggio di andare oltre. Cari, cari, la montagna è qui, il Giro d'Italia scrive storia qui. Cari, cari, il cuore batte così, il Ticino intero.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Byrne.
This is Troy Millings from Earn Your Leisure. On Earn Your Leisure, we're all about smart money moves, and here's one most people skip. Car insurance renews on autopilot, the rates creep up, and nobody tells you. That's what Insurify fixes. In about 2 minutes, completely free, you can see rates from more than 120 top insurance companies. And if there's nothing better today, they keep watching and notify you when there's a better rate. So go to Insurify.com. That's Insurify.com. Insurify.com.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Over time, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and 2 times the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.